They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Who Shall Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Join me in the studio today, film reviews editor at The Wrap, El Mero Mero de Navidad, Mr. Alonso Duralde. What is good with you, sir?
What's good is we're finally getting into what my husband likes to call oven weather. Because we don't have air conditioning in our apartment, and when it's like super all ass hot all summer, it's not oven weather. Like we eat a lot of cold things, or we use the crock pot. But now it's getting down there where it's like maybe in the 70s during the day, maybe mm-hmm. the 50s at night.
Mm-hmm.
Oven weather.
Nice. I like to imagine you guys cuddle up around the oven, maybe like read a book together or something.
We're not that oven centric. I just mean like I can eat a dinner that's been in the oven and we're not like dying of how hot it is in the apartment. So.
Just a bunch of hungry man, right? If I know Dave, it's just like a hungry man dinner.
Yeah, lean cuisine. No.
That voice right there is the film critic and host of Switchblade Sisters podcast. Welcome back because she wasn't here last week. Sometimes it snows in April. April Wolf. April.
Hi.
Hey, girl. What is good with you?
What's good with me? I got a book of poetry in the mail. Back at my poetry shit.
Here we go.
No, it's a friend's book. It's called The Sexiest Man Alive, and it's a weird kind of like reworking or erasures kind of poems based on every
song by Erasure. I'm in.
Right. Based on every feature of like people's sexiest man, you know. So she took like the feature article of that and reworked each one into a poem using their language. And so it's a really revealing and strange book of poetry where you get to like actually learn about celebrities and their language and what's acceptable discourse for them and blah blah blah. But I love that I blurbed it, and also Josh Gondelman blurbed it, and like we're like pretty far away from poetry, you know, like, you know, comic writer, and then I do film stuff. But it's nice that we're like two of the four blurbers and the rest are poetry people. So, yeah, I just thought it was cute. I like it.
That's what's up. I love Josh because Josh and I, our connection, Josh is a very funny comedian. He writes for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver?
Yeah.
And, but our connection online is
Multi-Emmy Award-winning Josh Gondelman.
Multi-Emmy Award, yes. Our connection is Wu-Tang lyrics on Twitter. If I post something about Wu-Tang, I know I'm getting a like from him. I know we might talk real quick about it, vice versa.
It's like when I need a little bit of love from Josh, I'll just put some Wu-Tang
boom,
up. All right.
Know? But Ari Melber might sneak into your DMs. Be careful.
I mean, he is impressive. Impressive. He sets like a whole new standard. I'm literally like, I need to check myself when I try and drop hip-hop lyrics because he will just woo right in there with them. We have a special guest with us tonight, whenever you're listening to this. Actress, when you hear her voice, you might recognize it from the Max Fun podcast Bubble. If you watch TV, you might recognize her from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Whoa. She hosts a show called So Are You Smarter Than a Drunk Person? Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Allison Becker.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here, Allison. How are you?
I'm great.
What is good with you?
Well, you know what's funny is April and I have been accused of being voice doppelgangers.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is confusing for people listening or if they don't hear it or
it's,
they can
it's
now...
It's all April. She's doing a bit.
They can now side by side.
It's like a long con.
Yeah.
This alter ego. Like this beautiful alter ego who does TV.
I will tell you, all white women sound the same to me.
That's fair. That's fair. They sound the same to me, and I'm white.
It's true.
Fran Drescher, Sia, doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
Did you say Fran Drescher and Sia?
Yes. It was a good joke, because they're opposites.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, professional like... comedy person.
But
someone
how...
gets me.
But how did you even come up with that?
My beautiful mind.
Oh, straight man. Out the dome piece.
Yeah, he's doing beautiful mind shit. He's just like, the name swirling around his head.
Well, we can say April or Allison before we talk. This is Allison.
Okay.
Oh, yes. We have like, should we give you guys a buzzer? Give you both like, bing, April.
Ding. Oh, yeah.
Allison.
Yeah. Did you
say what is good with you, Allison?
Did you say what is good?
What is
every
good
week,
with
we,
me?
Every time somebody, you know, you we ask ourselves.
Nothing has to be good.
Exactly.
No, there is something good. Okay. But I just got to think about it. Oh, I went to an adult summer camp this weekend.
Ooh.
Did you
You're
make friendship
bracelets?
You're
already making fun of me. Please do.
Were there lanyards?
Please do. There were no lanyards. But I still have some paint on me, you can see. I was okay. Painted.
Was there acid?
There was no acid. It was a chemical-free weekend.
Oh, no mushrooms? Oh.
Although everybody was smoking weed, yeah. But it was that's chemical.
That's
free.
Not a chemical.
It's not. It's a plant.
What does one do at an adult camp?
Swimming, kayaking, archery, crafting.
Okay,
I taught an improv class.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was fun.
Yeah, who won the talent show?
There was a talent show, yes. Guys. But it was non-competitive.
Those assholes in cabin B.
What's the point of a talent show if it's not competitive?
Right. I don't know.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
You're so LA.
I'm sorry. I'm a capitalist.
Look, it's award season.
Hey, Ricky.
Hey, what?
What's good?
Yay, April, back. Yes, yes. Alonzo, were you letting her have that one?
He might have been.
No, she totally won that on points.
He would never admit, even if I did.
What is good with me is I have lived here for, I think I've been here 8 years now. We'll say eight. And it has finally happened. The movie club. I used to do a movie club in Chicago, and now it has happened here this past weekend in Los Angeles. It is myself, close personal friends of mine. We in Chicago, what I would do is we would watch, you know, every couple of months, like every 3 or 4 months, we would watch. I would invite people over. I would provide them with delicious popcorn that I would make. Beverages, and then we would watch 3 movies. Initially, it just started with like 3 movies. Let's just watch something. Let's just have fun. And then I just started to realize, like, oh, if we watch like a fun, like serious movie at first, and then just kind of like break down into like, you know, the whatever movie we start at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, you became a programmer.
Goddamn right, I did. Yeah. You goddamn right, I did. One month was like all Oscar winners, and it was Purple Rain and Inner Space. Interspace won the Oscar for best special effects, y'all.
And it deserved it.
Yeah.
At the
yes.
time, those yeah. special effects were insane.
Still hold up.
Still good.
Still hold up.
I recently rewatched that movie. It's pretty great.
It's great, yeah. right?
It is yeah. good.
Big fan.
April, were you invited to Ricky's movie club?
Well,
no, as it turns out, I wasn't.
Funny. Me neither. What a coincidence.
Maybe, like, wow. He's just like, I don't want to talk about an invited
guy. It was like close friends, and I guess we didn't make that cut. So, you know. That sounds great, Ricky. What fun.
It was just a wonderful one-time thing. It's definitely not happening again.
I would not invite film critics to my movie.
Oh,
night.
God, no. We're the worst.
We're like, I honestly don't blame you.
Why is everyone leaving?
But it was it was so fun. We watched The Player, and we watched Critters. And it was the theme. We didn't have any like theme. We just put movies in a like, movie names in a hat. Everybody got to like think of a movie.
A good idea.
You get 2 choices.
But you only did 2.
This time we're only doing two.
Better. Three's
yes.
a lot.
Three
was
a lot.
Probably was that like when you were in your 20s?
Exactly.
Like, we did 3 movies. Yeah. Now I'm like my back hurts.
Yeah. Even when we started Critters, we were like, all right, here we go. Yeah. Stretch out, everybody.
Now is DiCaprio in Critters 2?
I believe he's in Critters 4 along with Angela Bassett.
There are 4 of them.
Oh, yeah.
My God, yes. I did not know that.
Yes.
They
yes.
just keep coming.
So many howlings, too. You don't even want to know.
Those fall apart as they go
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
Critters, I mean, actually, Critters works its way up after each
yeah,
one.
Yeah, there's certain franchises that can continue being weird. Like, I actually like some of the Tremors franchise, you know, extensions.
I've heard that series is good, actually.
Because they're ridiculous.
I love Tremors.
Tremors is a fantastic
one.
Movie.
The first is a great movie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And it gets weirder and,
yeah,
you know, as it goes.
I saw the second one. I think I bailed after that.
Yeah.
And it's like the deal, like, Michael Gross is in all of them.
Yeah, Michael Gross is the mainstay.
He's the connective tissue.
Yeah.
He's the
Tremors cinematic universe.
Is Fred Ward in any other ones?
That I don't remember.
All right. Fred Ward, also in The Player, featured,
that's right.
featured in The Player.
I'm talking about American movies.
That's a good
Six
Fred
degrees
Ward.
Degrees of Fred Ward.
Oh. Another person who's in Critters, who will be on the show later, Lynn Shay. We are today's episode, we're going to talk about the Tiffany Haddish, Kevin Hart comedy, Night School. We're going to be speaking to, as I just mentioned, Lynn Shay. She will be talking to us. She is the ambassador at the Los Angeles Scream Fest. And as always, we'll be having our staff picks. But first, it's time for a news roundup game called It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Here's how it works. We're all going to read news blurbs or headlines. Anybody can jump in. by answering these two questions. Is this important? Do I care? I want to start off with this first one because we're talking about one of my favorite directors who has an upcoming... There's the upcoming Halloween reboot. John Carpenter is involved. He is... I believe he's executive producing this movie.
That sounds right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. He's
executive producing. And he's scoring
this
as well.
And he's coming back to do the score. He did an interview recently with Entertainment Weekly, and he was asked if he'd ever thought about directing again. And he says all he really cares about now are basketball and video games. Quote, there are two important things in my life. Basketball, when the season starts, and video games. And to play video games, you have to sit in a chair and not really get up and do anything. I love that. That's my job now, to sit around and do nothing. I love John Carpenter. The last film that he directed was 2010's The Ward. Is this important? Do you all care?
I have a point of information, as
Please.
They say in the United Nations. I did student United Nations. I'm a nerd.
What country?
Mongolia.
Woo!
Yeah. Huh? Three for a loop there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Are you asking, is the news that John Carpenter likes basketball and video games important? Or are you asking, are video games and basketball important?
I mean, I don't think there's a wrong answer to that question.
I think we're going specifically to the John Carpenter angle.
Because I think video games and basketball are both very important.
Yes.
The fact that John Carpenter likes them is not important to me. And I think he would agree with that, that it's not important to me.
He's like, why would you think this is important?
Right. He'd be like, if this is important to you, you are insane.
Dave went to the Comic-Con panel for... Mission Mars? What was his Mars movie? Ghosts of Mars?
Ghosts of Mars.
Ghosts of Mars. And John Carpenter literally, like, he says something along the lines of like, yeah, at this point, I'm just pretty much happy to remake my old movies. And everyone in the audience laughed. And he said, no, really.
For real. Yeah.
I went to a screening of Big Trouble in Little China here a couple years ago. And he did a Q&A afterwards. And he legit said, like, I just want to smoke weed, play video games and watch basketball.
Great.
You know, I don't know when you're going to get something else from me.
He's also got dogs. Yeah.
Okay.
He's got dogs and he plays music and he does shows sometimes.
Show of hands, who, if they won the lottery, would keep working?
I would keep working, but I would keep working.
Because
depends what my job is. Like, if I'm doing this, I'd probably keep doing this.
I guess I would keep podcasting, sure. But like,
yeah, but if you were like selling life insurance,
if I was a garbage man, I'd be like, fuck all that. I'm living that good life.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, I would happily never see another movie that I didn't want to see. You know.
That would be a dream come true.
Can you even wrap your head around that one?
I wouldn't have had to see life itself.
For instance.
For instance.
So I totally get it. I totally get, like, I made enough money. Fuck it. Yeah. Video games and baseball.
I want John Carpenter to do whatever the hell John Carpenter wants to do. If he just travels every once in a while with his band and plays live scores from his movies, I'm fine with that.
Godspeed, John Carpenter.
Absolutely.
He's one of those things where also he's also a collaborative filmmaker too. He has been in his career. So you don't feel like you have like the partners and you don't want to like do it, then fuck it. I mean, Deborah Hill died in 2005 and they stopped working together before that, you know, and it's just like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't, if I didn't have like a buddy making something with me, I'd get kind of bummed about it.
Sure.
It just wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
All right, I'll tackle this one. Solo, A Star Wars Story. I've had a rough time. The film switched directors midway through shooting. It bombed at the box office. And now, with the release of the Blu-ray, we get to hear this sad story about what Alden Ehrenreich did when he found out he'd been cast as Han Solo. On a behind-the-scenes featurette on the Blu-ray, Ehrenreich admitted, I didn't know what to do, but I felt I should do something, so I, like, went to the beach by myself and walked around. And there was the pier, so I went to the pier, and I was like, I guess I'll ride a ride. So I just rode a roller coaster by myself. Is this important? Do you care?
I love him so much. I love that he kind of doesn't care about these things, but he feels like he has to care. I still remember the story of him like doing a short film, like some friend's short film, while he was shooting the solo, and just being like, oh man, I gotta leave the short film. I'm so sorry. Can I come back when I'm done shooting?
Aww.
And then directors were like, what? You want to come back? They're like, yeah, can you just like, I'm so sorry. And, you know, like, he's like that kind of person who I think is just
He's like, I'm going to do this other movie, and then I'm going to go back to the first movie. And they're like, but the movies are kind of different.
But I think that that's like such a genuine and sweet. It does remind me actually of his part in the Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar. Where it's just
God,
like,
he's so good in that.
You know, just a, and I was like, oh, maybe he's so good because that's kind of him. Maybe. You know, like this really.
Or maybe he was so good because that movie was garbage and it was the only good thing in it.
It was. There was some garbage in there.
Would that it were.
I did not
sample.
Enjoy that movie.
I love that scene so much.
So good. Yeah, he's the best.
I think he also probably would rode the roller coaster by himself, though, because he, like, when you find out you're cast in that movie, you're on lockdown. Like, you can't tell your mom you're in that movie. Like, in the beginning. So, like, he probably was just like, I got to celebrate by myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably.
He won a stuffed animal at the pier and told it.
Could you imagine?
And he told, he told that stuffed animal.
Oh, I'm going to do.
Just like,
that would be so hard.
I would love if there was like a TMZ or paparazzi shot of like just him riding solo in a roller coaster.
Solo. Also, I loved Han Solo, the movie. I thought he did a great job. He embodied the spirit of Han Solo. I thought he did a great job.
I don't think he did as bad a job as so many people.
I think he
said.
I didn't like the movie,
it.
But I don't blame him.
Yeah, I definitely
don't blame him.
I didn't enjoy. I thought. No, I feel like I'm such a I'm pooing and everybody's head.
You can be an asshole? Are you gonna be an asshole?
I'm not going to be an asshole. He's just not the Han Solo I see in my head.
That's
but
fair.
I thought he did a good job.
I thought he embodied him without doing an impression of him, which as an actor is very hard to embody totally. The spirit of another character while still paying homage to the character and not doing an impression. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah.
And so did Donald Glover, likewise. Embodied the spirit without doing an impression.
Yeah.
Also, Ricky didn't like Sisters Brothers, so his opinion is currently null and void around here.
I was real disappointed to hear that. And I was just like, what was I doing?
Good movie. It's not funny.
You're just making it worse.
I'm just going to skip and go on to the next story. Then.
Okay,
so Macaulay Culkin is really thirsty to be in the next.
Don't care. I'm just kidding.
Let me finish the question.
He's real thirsty to be in the. I'll try to read it fast just so you can skip. In the next Fantastic Beasts movie last week, author J.K. Rowling tweeted out a clarification of the Nagini character in the upcoming Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. God, this is so stupid. To which Culkin replied, quote, hey, J.K. Rowling, I'm with you. Nagini can be whatever she wants to be. She's a strong woman / snake. Also, can you write me into the next movie? I'm Macaulay Culkin from Home Alone, the movie. And I was also a pagemaster experienced with magic. He then tweeted at his friend Dan Fogler, who plays Jacob Kowalski in the film, hey, Mr. Dan Fogler, put in a good word for me. There's a back rub in it for you. Smiley face, winky. By the way, it's me, Macaulay Culkin, from Home Alone 2. We're friends in real life. No word yet from J.K. Rowling whether she's accepted his offer. For those of you that don't know, Macaulay Culkin is an actor who starred in Home Alone.
I mean, he was being funny, right?
Yes.
He's got such a dark sense of humor.
Also, this guy, like, his life was pretty fucked when he was a kid, right? Didn't his parents, like, steal all his money and stuff?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And then he got married really young, like at 17 or something crazy.
Yeah.
I'm on his side. He had a shitty childhood.
Like his best friend was Michael Jackson because it was like the only person who understood what it was like to be famous and fucked over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go for it, Macaulay Culkin.
Macaulay Culkin is great. And he has a sense of humor about this stuff. But oh my God, please troll your way into some better movies because these Fantastic Beasts, that first one sucks.
I didn't see them. I didn't see them.
I watched it on a plane, and usually, I mean, like, my attention is wrapped on a plane because there is nothing else to do on a plane, and it was so bad. It was so bad. I could not stop looking at that actor's weird lips doing a thing all the time, like a pout. It got me like real agitated on the plane, and I still didn't turn it off. I watched the whole thing.
The lead in Fantastic Beasts? I haven't seen any of the Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, there's like a
Beast
guy
movies.
Who's like very famous. He was in The Danish Girl.
Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah.
You don't want to just fuck his face? Wait, I don't understand. You look at Eddie Redmayne and get grossed out.
I hadn't thought about sitting on it.
Point, I mean, counterpoint. Like,
yes.
Perhaps I didn't think about his face as something I would
sit
on.
I think he's so
on.
Sexy.
And then...
that way you would have to look at his lips.
Exactly. I was thinking about, kiss worthy? Definitely not.
He looks like he would be such a good kisser.
I feel like
he's got juicy lips.
It would be too much lip, Allison.
who's your celebrity crush?
Who is my celebrity crush? It's probably going to be something weird. You know how you free associate and you're like, what's the first thing that pops in your mind? Rick Moranis. And like, I don't know why I immediately.
Also has juicy lips.
Rick Moranis can get it.
That was the first thing that
even know. I'm down with your Rick Moranis.
I didn't know until it came into my head.
Wow,
are
you feeling okay?
No, now I'm going to have to tell my husband what's going on.
Maybe he can do some cosplay.
Yeah, get a little tracksuit from Ghostbusters.
Oh my God.
Yes. My boyfriend's going to hear this and be like, no, we're not watching Les Mis again. Or ever.
Oh, no. You want to see some peak Eddie Redmayne, watch Jupiter Ascending.
Jupiter Ascending.
I did not watch that.
Oh.
I couldn't do it.
Eddie Redmayne raids the closet of Dame Edith, Dame Shirley Bassey, and every outfit he wears is just bananas.
That I might actually like.
Yeah. Oh, it's the Wachowskis.
Oh yeah, we talk a lot about that movie on the show. It's a movie that haunts this show.
No, not Cloud Atlas.
Not Cloud Atlas.
No, Jupiter Ascending. Okay, because every single time Cloud Atlas is brought up, Jupiter Ascending is like, Jupiter Ascending though.
Real quick though.
But Jupiter Ascending though.
But Jupiter Ascending though. Oh, well, that has been Is This Important? Do You Care? Would You Fuck His Face?
Is that a new segment?
Yes, it is.
When Allison comes back.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we just list people we want to fuck our face.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking Night School. You're listening to Who Shot Ya?
I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne, and justice is within your reach.
My mom refuses to take my phone calls.
My boyfriend says I should take our cats with me to graduate school, but I think he should keep them.
In the court of Judge John Hodgman, justice rules.
My partner's board game collection is out of control.
My sister won't stop stealing my clothes.
I'm Judge John Hodgman. I'm tough, but fair. I'll bring you justice, and I'm only a click away.
Tipping. Automotive etiquette. Siblings. Roommates. If you've got a case, go to MaximumFun.org/JJHO. Judge John Hodgman is tough, but fair. Subscribe to the podcast today.
Judge John Hodgman rules. That is all.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Join me in the studio today are...
Allison Becker.
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today we are talking about Night School. Allison, since you are a guest, could you please give us a brief synopsis of the film?
I'll do my best. It's a comedy starring Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish about a guy who needs to get his GED. He thinks he's dumb, but turns out he's not dumb. He just has a hard time learning. And he learns a lot about himself, and he goes back to night school, and he has to hide the whole thing from his perfect fiance.
That was perfect. That was perfect. If the movie was just about those things, I think it would have been an amazing film. But then, we didn't mention cheesecake pubes.
Vomit in mouth.
Vomit in mouth.
Third nipples.
I gotta say, I like that Christian chicken, though.
That Christian chicken. That joke is very funny.
I like that.
I feel like that was a Malcolm D. Lee joke, who directed this movie. He also directed Undercover Brother.
Which has some good stuff in there,
Undercover
too,
Brother
sure.
is an underrated movie of the early 2000s. Underrated. Yeah.
And a little film called Girls Trip, let's not forget. And,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. I was going to follow it up with Girls Trip. But it's now he's...
Tim Meadows in Undercover Brother. It's really good.
I never saw that, but I will watch it.
It's funny.
It's so funny.
The plot
of that movie is that they put the mind control in fried chicken to mind control black people. And Billy Dee Williams is like the face of it. He's like the colonel. He's like literally like a colonel in the army. And they make these commercials that are just so Undercover Brother.
But anyway, that's Undercover Brother.
But that's Undercover Brother. Yes.
This is Night School.
We've been waiting for, Tiffany Haddish kills it in Girls Trip.
Yes.
We've been waiting for the Tiffany Haddish follow-up. And this is what we got.
This can't be it. This cannot be it.
No,
this
is the one that
she clearly booked before she got famous.
Yeah, there's a million choppy things about this movie, but mm-hmm. one of them is clearly like, how can we cram more Tiffany Haddish into this thing? She's now famous.
Yeah. Do you think she did this before she was famous and was just like, I want to get in on this? Or do you think that she was like, oh, it's Malcolm D. Lee, who is kind of
and
like...
And Kevin Hart.
I think it was like a little bit of crossover, but I bet she signed on to this before she got famous.
Okay. I think she signed on right at the end of Girls Trip, and it was like, here's your first movie offer.
Yeah.
You would be, you know, yeah. top billing or second billing, and it's with Kevin Hart. I think she said yes.
Without reading it, probably. Yeah, because, like, you know, this is the name talent. This is what it is. And, it is a premise that could be funny, and you don't know what the...
It could even have been dramatic, weirdly enough.
It could have.
If anything, I thought the movie was trying to do so much with, like, I mean, we talked about just like the different kinds of comedy of, like, it was trying to be a gross out comedy with people puking on somebody else in physical comedy with people falling off roofs. I don't think this is a spoiler, but there was like one moment where I was like, oh shit. This could have been the movie where she reveals she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, this is great.
That to me was just like no, that was just like her character. Like, I don't know. That to me wasn't like a big aha moment.
Well,
it wasn't because there was nothing to her.
That's the problem.
Yes, exactly.
Had like an inkling of who this person was, that might have been like another layer. But as it is, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, all we got in the movie.
We're doing
was,
that now. All right.
I don't know that she got top billing immediately when she signed this, though. Like, I do feel like something happened in the editing to get her.
Yeah, I suspect the editing is very bad.
The editing is, and there were some looping like ADR issues.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like, you could see her mouth saying one joke.
Yes.
And this was, I don't know whose fault this was.
Well, it's PG-13's fault.
I think that's what it was. But there were two jokes in particular. One where she calls the young girl like. A MAGA bitch, like a Make America Great Again bitch, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
Like with no preface. And then there was another one where she calls, I always mispronounce her name. Marilyn Rashkub. Thank you, Marilyn Rashkub. She calls her like a blessed heifer, and that ADR was like, she was clearly saying something else.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, what? This ADR is terrible. And why is she being mean to them for no reason?
Well, yeah, this movie, yeah, I think definitely that she probably, it was a supporting character, and they tried to beef it up as much as possible, so they chopped in a bunch of other stuff. There's six writers on this thing, which for a comedy is often deadly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it does seem like potentially, and most of the time, most films do reshoots, you know, like additional photography, but this seemed like
lots of it
extra reshoots.
Because things would just like come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Although I don't know about you guys, but like I saw it last night and I knew that as soon as I heard about this movie, I love Kevin Hart and I love Tiffany Haddish.
Yes.
Like they both just fucking make me cry with laughter. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm going to see this movie, even if no one I know wants to see this movie, I'm going to see this movie. And then I saw it by myself last night, and the reviews had already come out, so it was already trashed. It already had like a 30% online, and I was like, whatever, I'm still going to see this movie. So I went in with very low expectations to an empty movie theater. I did enjoy it more than I thought I was going to. P.S. I was high.
Doesn't count then.
I shouldn't say that. But I was surprised and liked, and I think because I'm writing a lot of movies now, so I'm like very much critiquing what movies do with characters.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that they tackled microaggressions and racism. They tackled income disparages in couples where women make more than men. They tackled bullying. They tackled dyslexia and other learning disabilities.
They tackled like the HOTEP thing.
They tackled immigration.
Like black men like, HOTEP thing.
Yeah, like they really touched on a lot of issues, which for a comedy, I think they do deserve a nod for that. And they handled a lot of things in like a really funny, good way. They also fucked up a lot of things. But I think all those issues that they hit, I was like when you realize he's dyslexic, I was like, which was early on, I got like a little emotional because I was dyslexic when I was younger. And I was like, oh, like you suddenly feel sorry for this character. And I was like, yes, they missed the mark with things. But I also like the scene where you see all the students in night school go back to their houses and you're like, oh, this woman's dealing with like a shitty husband and this guy has like a weird relationship with his son. And I was like, you all of a sudden feel sorry for them.
But
I don't know.
Even all the things that you listed felt like, yeah, there were ideas on the page and they exist in the film, but they don't do anything with them. Like, yeah, it's interesting to have a lead character who's dealing with both dyslexia and dyscalculia and all that kind of thing. And in a better movie, a better comedy, a better drama that would have actually delivered somewhere. We don't even see all the home lives. Like, I would have liked to have known more about, like, Romany Malco's deal, the blonde girl. Like,
yeah, we didn't see hers at all.
Yeah, we
which
get,
I feel like was edited out too.
Yeah, totally. We get a little bit of Rash Gibbs and a little bit of Rob Riggles.
That shit might have gotten too depressing.
You know what else they touched on, which I loved, was because Time Magazine just had a cover story on this, is how terrible public school teachers are paid.
Yeah.
And that they did carry through. Like, she's even really sleepy at the graduation because she's just, like, doing too much.
You know,
yeah, I don't know if it was part of the marketing of, like, we got to make this a Kevin Hart, Tiffany Haddish movie, but I thought this movie would have worked so much better if it was actually an ensemble piece about everybody in the class.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I enjoyed all the scenes in the classroom. When they have that, you know, hey, we're going to break into the school moment and download the test. I was like, oh, yeah, we're going on an adventure with these guys. Oh, this is great. I'm so excited. But it just felt like they were so much trying to make it a Kevin Hart, Tiffany Haddish vehicle. And I was like, you have so many of these other amazing, like, I think of the ensemble, Al Madrigal. I want to see Al Madrigal in everything. I can listen to him say
so
dental hyenas. Hilarious.
So funny.
Well, and I heard people talking about raving about Romany Malco, and I love him, and I think he's great, but he gets so little to do in this movie. I was just like, where is...
He's reaction shots.
Yeah, I thought he was hilarious.
Like, I thought he was
made me laugh, but again, I was high.
I told Ricky, like, they keep cutting to him saying, that's what's up, and it was like, that's like in a movie where nothing is happening.
I was like, shout out to Ricky!
Yeah. I know! I was like,
oh, hell yeah!
You're not as funny as Ricky when you say
Wait,
that.
Wait, I have a question.
But that's like in a movie where they cut to the dog, you know, like the reaction shot. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, God. Did you guys... I am not a fan of, like, violence in movies, or excessive violence, but that prison fight made me laugh so hard because it went on for so long, and then that button of like, are we all just not going to talk about
this? Yeah, that was great.
That was a fucking great scene.
But there are some good scenes in the classroom, but they're also shot terribly.
Yes. Agreed.
And that's the thing.
Doesn't make it a good movie. Yeah.
One of the things that Judd Apatow has, you know, engineered, you know, with his cinematographer is the idea of lighting for 360 and shooting for 360.
Especially when you're working with funny people who are just going to be riffing.
Exactly. Yeah. And like the setup of like the tables, the everything, like you can't shoot in that way. And that's actually a really great way of shooting comedies because you get more organic reactions to things that is easier for the edit. And that's not obviously what was doing. And it almost felt like these people were in different rooms. Mm-hmm. Like they were just like getting coverage and maybe like just talking to someone who wasn't there.
Yeah.
The jokes were there, and I was just like, oh, this could be there. You know, like the way that the That's What's Up guy was just like explaining like his, you know, his wokeness.
Yes.
And then I was just like, oh, you're nuts. You know, like that kind of realization or awakening. But he was talking to himself in a way.
Yeah. Did you guys go to screenings or did you go to like movie?
I saw it last night.
I went to the theater.
Okay. I bought a ticket. It was a nearly empty theater. Yeah. I was not high. I didn't laugh once. I did not laugh one time.
If you smoke weed, you got to get high when you know a movie's going to knock
clearly,
it
out. Clearly, the lady behind me, I don't know if she was high, she was chuckling through the whole thing.
I was the only one laughing.
Were you sitting behind me at my screen?
Maybe.
Whatever.
It may have been, actually. Were you at the ArcLight?
No, it was Grove.
Okay.
But yeah, it was, I like these people so much, even in something like, you know, as much as I hate the ride-along movies, there's at least a couple things in there that Kevin Hart will do or say that'll make me laugh.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Wow.
Single time in this. And I just kept waiting for it to take off. I'm like, these people are really good.
I laughed at Al Madrigal a lot. And the guy, I'm forgetting the actor's name who says That's What's Up. But I laughed at him
Romany
a lot.
Romany Malco.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Romany Malco. Okay.
You didn't laugh at him at all?
I didn't.
That's okay.
No.
I'm not mad at you.
No. I saw it. Like, I was like, you know, this is just like a scene happening.
What did you guys think of Taron... Killam All, something like that.
Somebody who I think is funny, but wasn't funny in this.
Hey,
that's the thing. This movie's like an hour and 50 minutes.
Way too long.
And it felt it was both too long and yet totally short delivering on anything.
The trailers, if you watch the trailer, they're trying to tell two different movies. They're trying to sell two different movies
at the same time.
Even in the trailer. So you could tell that there was going to be problems with, you know, finding a narrative that they wanted to sell and they wanted to go with. Yeah. But I was thinking, you know, so Vulture had that, I think, an article about Black Scent and Taron Killam Killamall's accent. His
Killamall, like God sort him out.
Yeah, his black person voice.
His black scent.
His black scent.
His black scent, yes. Bethy Squires said that Night School is somewhat revolutionary in terms of representation of black scent. Normally, when a white dude uses a black scent in a movie, he's portrayed as a goofball or silly. In this film, it's indicative of Taron Killam's character's villainy. It's never meant to be cute. I thought the black scent was funny. I thought it was funny because they were calling him out on it.
Yeah.
I wanted more of it, especially when they like were in his office and we see the Lean On Me poster behind him.
Yes.
I was like, oh, this is more of this joke. Again, back to like, I don't know if that's a Malcolm D. Lee thing with him like trying to take these uncomfortable moments of a black scent, of black people's relationship to fried chicken and trying to like get a smart joke out of it. That's what I got from him using that black scent and people calling him out on it.
Yeah, I thought it was funny. You know, yeah. And you think about the idea that in the real world that most of the people who teach people of color are actually white people, and it's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Also too, in regards to that article on in Vulture, she goes on to like mention what's his name, Seth Green. In I can't remember what the name of the movie is, but he's basically she compares Seth Green's character in, I think it's like 10 Things I Love About You.
Or Can't Hardly Wait.
Can't Hardly Wait. There you go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where in that movie, Seth, I mean, I remember seeing the trailer to that and being like, nah, bruh. He's like wearing like FUBU, and he's just, I mean, he's playing a wigger.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like, yeah, that's, ugh, that's yeah. rough.
I think it might have been like pre-Jamie Kennedy playing that, but
I agree.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I agree. Or as opposed to this one, I feel like there is there's commentary on it.
I agree. And that's what I was referencing when I was talking about the racist microaggressions.
Yes.
It is something that people talk about, but it's like on the line of like, well, I don't know. And it needs to be talked about. And it is a form of racism. And I agree with that writer that it was.
But none of that was as cool as the one scene in Girls Trip where Regina Hall tells the white boss, okay,
yes,
you get to come to this event.
You are as a guest.
As a guest. You don't get to say any of this stuff.
And she's like, okay, girl. And he's like, nope.
Nope. Nope.
Nope.
Yeah.
But what are we telling the people with this one? I think we kind of get an idea already from consensus here. Should our listeners, should they screen it, stream it, or skip it? Allison, I'll start with you.
I'd say skip it, but maybe stream it if you're a little high.
If you got that
weed. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe stream it if you feel like it. I sometimes like watching, you know, silly movies like this that don't actually gel when I'm at home and I'm like hungover and I'm like, yeah, just do something, entertain me.
Yeah. It's better than reality.
Yeah, take a McDonald's meal.
It's better than reality TV.
And
right?
I do, I'm like, I'm into this Christian chicken thing, so. That's funny.
I know what your answer is going
to
be.
I do want to see like close ups of the signs because I saw like the Beelzebub hot wings, but I want to know what the other like.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
I want to see like what their icy drink is called.
Yeah, there was like some like watermelon something in the background where I was like, I just want somebody to move over so I can see what that is.
Skip. Even if you love these actors, you've seen them in better stuff. Watch that again.
I'm going to say, put on your tightest Kevin Hart muscle shirt and stream this movie at home. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. It's problematic, but I laughed. It's my house. No.
I thought for sure you were going to say that's what's up, but instead you went, it's my house.
It's funnier listening to you talk about it than it was to sit through it. That should be a service you provide.
If y'all rent it at some point, just give me a call. I'll come over and watch it with you. You know?
Or you'll just recap it for
me. I'll just tell you what goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we are going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to speak to Scream Fest Ambassador Lynn Shay. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Who Shot Ya?
Hey, readers. All of you bookworms,
comic geeks,
library junkies,
literary fiction lovers,
bibliophiles,
and nerds.
Want to get more out of your reading life?
Listen to Reading Glasses.
I'm Bria Grant.
And I'm Mallory O'Mara.
We want to help you read better.
Join us every Thursday on Maximum Fun's new podcast while we talk about book culture and solve your reader problems.
Reading Glasses will teach you how to vanquish your to-be-read pile,
connect with other readers,
and get more reading into your busy day.
No matter what you read or how you read it,
we'll help you do it better.
That's cute.
Welcome back to Who Shall Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Join me in the studio today are...
Allison Becker.
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
For our next segment, April, I'm going to toss the reins over to you if you'd like to introduce our guest.
I would love to introduce our guest because she was also a guest of mine on Switchblade Sisters on one of my favorite episodes where we talked about The Shining. Our guest is Lynn Shea today, who is a consummate performer in some of my favorite films, including Dead End with Ray Wise, including all the Insidious movies. She was the lead in the Last Key, which came out not too long ago. She's been in a bunch of Farrelly Brothers movies. She is iconic. Lynn Shea is everywhere. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. What a nice introduction. I'm blushing over the phone for real.
I think that we would like to talk to you a little bit today about your being the ambassador for a horror fest here in Los Angeles.
Yes, ma'am.
I would also love to talk to you just about your film career and what's next and that kind of thing. But you are the perfect ambassador for our horror film festival because you are everything that I think about the genre, which is an actual kind of abiding kindness that is underneath all of this horrific stuff. I mentioned Dead End earlier, and I was actually hoping that you could tell us a little bit about that performance specifically. Dead End, for people who don't know, it's actually it was made by a French director in 2002, and it's Lynn Shea and Ray Wise as, mother and father of this family who get stuck on this long road trip that never ends until people just start dying. But your character also has some kind of hysteric quality to her, which I love. And I was hoping you could talk about that kind of hysteric woman in horror films. How do you get to that point when you're performing?
I never really start out thinking about that, to be honest. I mean, I usually try and plot the character a little bit. I mean, this, as you said, was a sort of a classic story of a mother and father, a daughter and brother who argue all the time on their way to grandma's house for dinner, for Christmas dinner. I mean, that's really, it all takes place in a car and in the woods. And we shot it, it was 3 weeks of night shooting in Franklin Canyon, which was the craziest shoot in general. We were way down in the canyon, and it was really creepy. I mean, for real, it was creepy. Ray Wise is one of my favorite people, as well as one favorite actors. I mean, we've done quite a few things together over the years. And the director, as you mentioned, is these two French guys wrote it, and I actually auditioned for it. I think
they're making you audition for things, Lynn?
It's amazing.
Yeah, they do. And this was quite... I did audition, and actually, I think an actress named Julie Haggerty was supposed to play the role. I don't know why I'm remembering that moment. And somehow she pulled out or couldn't do it, and so they were looking for the mother. And so I auditioned, and I got the part. I was really excited. I loved the story. And again, these elements of the dynamics of the family, which were fairly classic in some ways, I had the pie, we were ready to go, it was argumentative in the car. The relationship between me and Ray, I thought, was really sort of, we have very good chemistry together as actors and as friends, and we both play off of each other very well. And I just remember that the one scene, I thought, she's always eating in the car. So I had
that's
carrots.
Your addition to the character. You're like, she's going to be eating.
And I was annoying him by chewing on the carrots. And I remember the more I was annoying him, the louder I kept trying to chew. And just stuff like that we sort of discovered as we played the scenes.
But you're often in movies where you are either murdered or people are trying to murder you.
Or I'm eating.
Or you're eating.
Sometimes too. Yes, that is all true. But this was I think this was a really scary movie too. I remember that scene with the baby carriage, and you don't really know, you don't really ever truly find out where Marcotte is. I mean, it's this sort of this mythical place that we're sort of going to, and we keep ending up. It's like a circuit that we keep winding up in the same place over and over again. And as we keep running through this circuit, the relationships get tenser and tenser, and more secrets come out. So it's really about also the secrets of our lives through this tension that the family is living begin to be revealed, which maybe is true in real life. You know, when people are under pressure, we all have secrets, right, that we don't share, even with people we really love, and that it takes a certain kind of pressure to make them come forward. So I had obviously, there was this one, I had had some affair with a friend of his, and he didn't know about it, and it all gets blurted out when my son is murdered, and I mean, it's a crazy
movie. Don't give too much
movie.
Away, Lynn. Jesus. I mean, I was going to give like a little plug to this movie, but like, do you need to, like, cool it?
Should I be quiet?
No. Can you, I mean, you've been in some, you know, obviously iconic horror films. Can you maybe pinpoint any of your favorites that you've done?
That's one. I mean, Dead End, which is why I went on. Excuse me if I went on too long.
No. I'm just. I don't want people to know too much going in. I mean, it's a great movie. They should just go.
They should
in
see it, and not hear me talk about it,
or both.
Okay, but anyway, that is one of my favorites. I think Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, because that was really. I loved working with Wes Craven so much. And that was an opportunity given to me basically by my brother, Bob Shea, who owned New Line Cinema and started New Line Cinema.
It's weird because nepotism actually worked because...
Totally.
Like, the right... like, I'm so happy that it worked for you specifically,
oh my God.
You know?
And I, you know, Bob used to... My brother is a very interesting man as well as, I think, a real, really genius in terms of, in many respects, and started New Line Cinema in 1968, and I was the little sister... You know, he would ridicule me by saying, "This is my sister, Linda Shea. She's an actress." And I would cringe, you know, and all these people go, "Oh, hi, Linda," or Linda. So, and Bob used to say to people, "Put my sister in your movie." And I never knew it. And then when I would go to thank him, he'd say, "Oh, get your own job. I didn't do anything." And he actually is responsible for... really for starting my career in a way, because Wes Craven, same, he did it to Wes, and Wes gave me that role as the teacher. Dumb and Dumber was a New Line Cinema film, the first Farrelly Brothers movie. And same thing, he said to Charlie Wessler, "Put my sister in your movie." And I got this call that I had a part, and I didn't know where it came from, and I was all excited. And when I called Bob to see if it was from him, he sort of pretended it wasn't. And some months later, I got a letter from that Bob sent me that the producer had sent him saying, "Thank you for sending us your sister." So the cat was out of the bag. And
now, but Dumb and Dumber, that's not the kind of role that like somebody does as a favor to somebody else. I mean, that was some real commitment there on your part as
oh my
a performer.
God. Yeah.
You know, it's not like you just sort of breezed in and said, you know, like telegram, you know, there's a lot going on there.
You know, I swear to you, everything I have an opportunity to do, I work on it exactly the same way, whether it's one line or whether it's, I mean, I've been trained to do that in some respect. And I love finding out who somebody is, no matter what little or how much they have to say. That's the joy for me of acting and of discovering character. And it's kind of like walking into a tornado. You walk into the middle of someone else's soul in a weird way. And even Mrs. Neugeberger is definitely saw me in that movie. And I remember I said to Pete, I said, "What if at the end, instead of I scream, I whimper like the dogs?" So instead of the scream when I open the back of the truck, anyway.
You are bringing me back. You are bringing me back so far.
Anyway, so I mean, as I say, so cut me off when you need to.
Oh my God, I love you so much.
This is great,
Lynn. So you're the ambassador of this year's Scream Fest. Can you tell us what Scream Fest is?
Well, I had this little idea that. I wrote this as a little thing for them to print, that screaming is good for the soul. And it's a really important, because people often ask me, why do you think people like horror films? And I honestly think that's it, that there's, that we all are, fear is a very fascinating emotion. And everybody has fear, and everybody's afraid of different kinds of things. But the idea you can be in a place with a bunch of people all screaming together over something that makes you frightened is heavenly. I mean, it's cathartic, it's fun, it's you both, your adrenaline goes forward, and you have that experience, but in a safe environment. And so that was one of the things I wanted to say with Scream Fest is screaming is good for the soul, and fest, it means festival or celebration. So it's really a celebration of your own fear. And these movies that we will be presenting are different aspects of that. You know, some have comedic elements, some are probably going to be, you know, really serious, bloody horror films. But I think that fills a need in people in a safe environment. And I was really honored to be invited to do this, and I'm looking forward to it very much.
You're definitely the perfect choice, I think. I do have to ask, though, because I had heard that you're in Nicolas Pesce's The Grudge.
Oh, I forgot to mention. Oh, my God. I'm so excited about this
me
movie.
Me too. I'm so excited. He's like one of my favorite directors.
Are you ready for 3 hours of talking?
Oh, should we just do a... Laura, should we do a different podcast? Because we can just have one just on Nicolas Pesce's, like, two films, you know?
Well, first of all, he's a little bit of a dream come true, for me especially. I was kind of nervous to meet him because I watched Eyes of My Mother, which is one of the scariest movies I ever saw.
Yes. Oh, my God. It's so good.
His juxtaposition of imagery and photography, he's a cinephile like James Wan is a cinephile in a way, although he's darker than James. James has more of a heart, I think, than Nicholas does. Nicholas has this brutality inside of him inside this gentle, kind guy who you just want to go and hang out with him.
Oh, yeah. He's like Toby Hooper meets Cronenberg.
Totally. That's a perfect description.
Thank
of
you.
Him.
I've thought about this a lot, Lynn.
Well, you nailed it. That's
Thank you.
Totally it.
Thank you.
And he kind of bops around. You know Adam Rifkin? I'm sure you know Adam
yes.
Rifkin. He reminds me he could be Adam's little brother because they both wear baseball caps all the time when they work, and they both have little hair coming out of the back. You know, Adam has a ponytail. Nicholas has curls coming out the back of his cap, and they have this sort of very gentle, really upbeat presentation. There's nothing evil, sinister, scary. I mean, they're full of humanity, both of them. And Nicholas wrote this script. Every time I read it, I would get ice cold.
Is there anything that you could tell us about this that is not?
I can just tell you there's several parallel stories that go on within it. I have a phenomenal role. It might be one of the strongest roles I've ever had a chance.
I'm excited because I hope that we get to talk about it when it comes out on.
Yeah, so
on this
I won't.
Podcast,
I won't.
So.
I can't spill the beans. And I. But it's got a terrific cast. The thematically, The Grudge really is. You know, it's a house where really bad things happened, and those ghosts penetrate and possess whoever lives in that home. And so it's parallel stories a bit of different people who have lived in that house and then all sort of meet in various ways. It's really a fantastic script, and I'm most excited, really, about the release of that, I think, of everything. But there's been so many good things.
That's wonderful. Do you have any questions about Scream Fest or anything, guys?
Yeah, because
I feel like
Scream
I'm taking,
Fest, you know,
sorry,
again,
taking
I wish
over.
I probably didn't do my homework well enough. I should have looked through the list and... but I know that they're very discerning, and it's a beautiful festival. I mean, it's going to be very. I'm honored again to sort of be the spokesperson and the point person for all these young filmmakers who have really come out with some interesting storytelling. So.
Yes, you're the fulcrum. You're the fulcrum for horror. Everything else turns around Lynn Shay, including Screamfest, which we're very excited about.
Well, I don't have a question, but I just want to say that I've loved watching you in movies since I was a kid. I love listening to you right now and just hearing how grateful you are about the career that you've had. I didn't know you were going to be on the show today. I just watched Critters on Saturday night.
She's so good. I know. She's so good.
So,
we didn't even talk about Snakes on a Plane, because remember, she was on Snakes on a Plane. She's in everything. Everything.
Amount of fireworks that are going off in my brain right now, just sitting here enjoying this interview, are amazing. So it has just been a pleasure to listen to you, Lynn.
Yeah, and I'm not a horror guy, but, you know, I never get what I want in movies, but the notion that the through line of the Insidious series is you is, mm-hmm. like, just that makes those movies for me.
Yeah, it does. All right, so Angelino's Screamfest is taking place October 9th through the 18th in Hollywood, and for more information and tickets, you can go to ScreamFestLA.com. And Lynn, how long does your reign as the Screamfest ambassador last?
Well, I think it begins October, let me just look to double check.
Is it through the whole fest, or they just get you for a day?
Well, they get us, we have press on the 8th, and then I think the actual evening of the 9th is when it opens, and then... The film that I am in with Michael that Timothy Woodward directed, The Final Wish, that's premiering on October 17th at 8:00 p.m. So I will definitely be there for that, and I hope people will come and see it. I think it's a wonderful story and wonderful people involved. I mean, I didn't know any of them before, and I was really impressed with the photography, the cinematography, and the story itself. So I will definitely be there on the 17th. But I think the only nights, actually, that I will be involved, days and nights, are the 8th and the 9th. And then I guess the festival goes through, is it the 20th, maybe?
The 18th.
It's the 18th, yeah.
The 18th, so the 18th. So I'll be ambassadoring around as much as possible.
All right.
We'll look for your sash.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Oh, I love you all. Thank you for letting me blabber a little bit. I hope I didn't go way over.
No, we love you.
You were great. Thank you so much. It's time for Staff Picks. Every week we ask the panel to tell us about a movie we think folks should check out, any movie at all, in the theater, streaming, what have you. Allison, what do you have for us this week?
I recently saw Eighth Grade, and I just thought it was a perfect film and a perfect example of a low-budget film that is still perfectly shot. Mm. I thought they didn't... there was a lot of, like, locked-off long shots, which is... for those of you not in the movie business, the way you save a lot of money by not turning the cameras around. But it never felt like I wanted the cameras to turn around. The lead actress is a total no-name. She was not an actor prior to this film. And I kind of went into it with arms crossed because I was like, a straight guy wrote a movie about an eighth grade girl. I don't know how I feel about this. And directed it, and he nailed it. It was just a perfect film. I loved it.
Excellent. Eighth Grade. And that, I believe, is still in theaters, right?
Yeah.
Is it still in, like, an unlimited?
I think so,
but it's also
trickling out. But
the Blu-ray's out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, word. Yeah. Oh. Well, go see it in the theater. Buy that mug on Blu-ray, y'all. Who would like to go next?
This is opening limited this weekend, but it's going to be very wide in a couple of weeks. So if it's not near you now, it will be very soon. The Hate U Give premiered at the Toronto Film Festival, and based on a very popular YA novel that I've not read, stars Amanda Stenberg as a girl who does a lot of code switching. She goes to a sort of snotty, fancy prep school where she's one of the very few black students, but she also lives with her family in a very working class black neighborhood. And those two worlds kind of collide when she is in a car with her childhood friend. They get pulled over by the cops and he gets shot, and she's the only witness. This movie is really intense and really moving and really smart and put me through a real emotional roller coaster. It kind of reminded me of, I think this is going to be a movie for white people the way that Brokeback Mountain was for straight people, in terms of, like, making you think about this issue that you've maybe made up your mind about, and then understanding the human beings at play and what it's really about. And, you know, this is a movie that's about, you know, on the one hand, it's a teen movie. You know, it's about stolen kisses and cars and going to the prom and stuff. But it's also about a father telling his children, when you get pulled over by the police, put your hands on the dashboard and spread your fingers wide so they don't think that you're reaching for a gun. And it's incredibly relevant and very powerfully acted. Another great Regina King performance as the mom, but the whole cast is terrific. Maybe it doesn't 100% stick the finale, but for the most part, this is one of, like, the most powerful movies I've seen this year. I really recommend check out The Hate U Give.
That's what's up, yo. That's what's up. April.
So, Ricky.
Yes?
The one that I would like to recommend is a queer horror film that came out like last month or like 2 months ago. It's called What Keeps You Alive. And I don't think that I've talked about this too much yet, but it is a really great kind of twisty classic horror film. This lesbian couple goes to the woods to this cabin, and they're going to celebrate their 1 year anniversary. And I don't want to give anything away. All I want you to know is that there are like two shots that I'm still like, oh shit. But it is a really wonderful low budget movie, and I think it's out of Canada. One of the lead actresses, she also scored the film too.
Oh wow.
So it's directed by a dude, but it stars two women and they're in this queer relationship, and I highly recommend it.
Cabin Woods horror movie. Check.
It's so
all the boxes.
So What Keeps You Alive, and the performances, I think, are the thing that I love the performances of the leads. They're so good.
Is it streaming yet or still theatrical?
I think it's streaming, and it's very cat and mouse.
Okay. All right. Well, I mentioned last week I was going to the my first film festival. I went to the LA Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw a documentary.
I was wondering why you were wearing that monocle.
I saw a documentary that's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen in my life. It's called Mr. Soul. Shout out to Drea Clark for recommending this mug to me. I'm going to read her blurb from the website just so I can make sure everybody clearly says gets what I'm saying here. Mr. Soul is from 1968 to 1973. The show Soul was the first nationally televised all-black variety entertainment show to be produced and hosted by an openly gay African-American, Ellis Hazelip. At a time of deep racial turmoil, Hazelip gave radical voice to the struggles and successes of the black experience, ushering giants and rising stars of black American culture onto the national stage. So basically between 1968 and 1973, there was this show on PBS called Soul, hosted by this openly gay black man. And beforehand, I mean, I just saw that it was called Soul, Mr. Soul. I was expecting it to be, you know, oh, I'm going to see cool footage of, like, Stevie Wonder. I'm going to see cool footage.
It's the Don Cornelius story.
Yeah, exactly. I was expecting, you know.
And then it just wrecked you.
I mean, it was about black art, black culture. So a lot of it was listening to Nikki Giovanni, listening to James Baldwin, watching, at the time, contemporary black dance, watching, you know, actors, like, perform poetry. It's like on the show.
Did you weep?
Almost. There's a moment where they show Billy Preston that is just like amazing. And it's like it's these artists who I love, who when I loved them, they were definitely kind of like in the party stage. Party stage of their career isn't the right words, but it was definitely like Billy Preston is like dance music. It's going to be on. But this is like when Billy Preston is like, you know, has that energy, but he's doing gospel songs. It's when Earth, Wind, and Fire is performing, but it's not Earth, Wind, and Fire doing September or, you know, Boogie Wonderland. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire doing, like, you know, their, like, early African R&B, you know, influence music. And it was just fucking amazing. Baba Obatunde was in this. Afterwards, they did a Q&A, and the whole cast, much of the cast were there. It's a lot of talking heads with footage. And just, like, the message of, like, multiculturalism that they had as well. Black people, Latinos working together, and how we need to push things forward in this country.
It's like Black, like, Mr. Rogers.
I'm telling you.
That would be such a good double feature then, right?
Oh. You should do that for your movie.
Won't you be my neighbor? Next week?
PBS,
though.
It's unfortunately
PBS though.
Unfortunately, it doesn't have distribution yet. The director, Melissa Hazelip, I do not remember if she's his granddaughter. I don't remember what the relation is, but she's related to him. She's taking it all around the country and showing it at festivals.
Awesome.
Oh, that sounds like a good fit for Ava DuVernay's distribution company, Array.
Whether they pick it up, Anna
I hope
they
make some phone calls.
Annapurna picks it up. I mean, it's just an important story that needs to get told that I knew nothing about. It was so great. That's it for SFX. Sorry, I got all caught up. So emotional. I
started
thinking
did.
About it.
I know. I love it.
The one dude, his first name is Felipe. The way he was talking about, because I mean I'm Latino, and just the way that he was talking about Latinos of African descent and how we need to come together and like work with Black people and just that message of multiculturalism that he was like really like emphasizing. I wanted to be like, dale, 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 dale.
Aww.
You know, it was so goddamn great.
I looked
so
it up real quick. Great. If people want to see if it's coming to where they are.
Thank you.
The website is Mr. Soul Movie, MrSoul, S-O-U-L, movie.com.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Hey, if you like what you're hearing, leave us that good review on Apple Podcast. What a segue, huh? What a segue. Yeah. Yo, mm-hmm. I'm a professional.
Smooth.
If you like what you're hearing on this show, you want to leave us a review, please leave us that 5-star review on the Apple Podcast because you will get a shout out on the show. We've got one review today. It is from Marvel Trash.
All right.
Marvel Trash says, I am always impressed with each episode. It's so awesome to hear the perspectives of such a diverse group of people. I always seem to agree with at least one of these great people, and it's so nice to hear the opinions of people I respect. Thanks for making every Friday amazing.
Aww.
Oh, thank you, Marvel Trash.
That's really
Marvel
sweet.
Trash, yes, thank you very much. Allison, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. This
yes.
has been lovely.
It's been fantastic.
Thank you, Allison.
Allison, where can people see you? Where can they hear you? Where can people enjoy more Allison Becker?
Well, I do have this new show called Are You Smarter Than a Drunk Person, which you mentioned earlier. It's on a new streaming network called the Brewdog Network,
okay.
Which focuses on alcohol, the whole network, but mostly craft beer. And yeah, my show is a bar trivia show where we pair a person, a normal person like ourselves,
a normie,
with a person who is a genius, but the genius is drunk.
But
yes.
on the good stuff.
Gotcha. Yes. Whatever okay. they prefer to be
all
drunk
right,
on.
All right.
And it's a lot of fun. It was so fun to shoot, and I highly recommend people check it out.
And that show is airing right now? People can
yes,
see it
it's
now?
Right now
Excellent.
On the Brewdog Network.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
super
me,
fun.
Guys.
Super fun. Next week, we'll be talking about A Star Is Born with all returning guests, Louis Vertel. That'll be great. By the way, if you have any questions you want to ask or you just want to make a comment about something you heard on the show, call the Who Shot Line. You can call us at WSY-803-1664. That's WSY-803-1664. We're gathering our favorite calls for an upcoming mailbag segment, so don't be shy. Go ahead and holler at us. You can ask us anything you want. If you got a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. April Alonzo, it is good to see y'all.
Always
it's
a treat.
Always
good to see
you.
You.
Always good to see you. This is a production of MaximumFun.org, and that is What Is Up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.